like to begin Hechas Purim. We start off. Part of Hechas Purim is really with the Shabbos Zachar. The Shabbos before Purim, as you well know, is known as Shabbos Zachar because we read Parshas Zachar. What's the mitzvah of Parshas Zachar? The Torah tells us at the end of Parshas Kitei says, Zachar is Asher Asalucha Amalek, Baderech Mitzvah Mitzrayim. And at the end, the Torah says, Lo Tishkach. So there's a mitzvah asay of Zachar and a mitzvah lo asay of not forgetting. What are we supposed to remember? What are we not allowed to forget? So the Rambam in Hilchos Melachim, Perikei, tells us that we should constantly remember Mas of Haroim, the evil deeds of Amalek, Vairevato, and the fact that they weighed in as an ambush for us as we were leaving Mitzrayim, Kedei La'orer Evaso, in order to increase our hatred towards this evil nation, Shenema Zochar Yisrael Asher Asalucha Amalek, etc. Now, that's a mitzvah from the Torah. The question is, what about Parshas Zachar? We know that, says the Gemara, that on the Shabbos before Purim, so we have to read this section, these three psukim from the Torah. Is that the requirement? In other words, the mitzvah taseh of the Torah, does one have to read from an actual Sefer Torah in order to fulfill that requirement? And does one need a minyan in order to fulfill that requirement? Or we say that there are two levels. On a Doraita level, a person has to remember Parshas, has to remember Amalek. So they can open up any print of Chumash, or if they knew it by heart, they can say those psukim by themselves in the privacy of their own room. That's a Doraita level. On the Rabbanan level, there's an Indian of getting together in shul, reading from the Sefer Torah with the minyan. So are they two separate levels, or no? The actual mitzvah from the Torah requires one to have a minyan and to read from an actual kosher Sefer Torah. So that's the machloket to be shown. The simplest understanding of the Rambam and the Ramban is that the Torah mitzvah does not require one to have a Sefer Torah, does not require one to have a minyan. You can just open up a printed chumash in the privacy of your own home and read it to be mekayim the Torah, the mitzvah d'oraisa. To Rabbanan, you have to hear the kriyas haTorah in shul. The Rosh, Rabbeinu Asher, was of the opinion that actually midoraita, you need to have a Sefer Torah, and midoraita, you need to have a minyan. Although the Mechaber in Shulchan Aruch seems to side with the Rosh, that the mitzvah from the Torah actually requires a minyan and the Sefer Torah, and the Mishnah Berurah, Siman Tav Reish Peh, the Sharat Zion, seems to say that that is only a Derabbanan level. Certainly, at least regarding the requirement for a minyan, is only on a Derabbanan level. Are women chayv in this mitzvah? Now we have to ask the question, at least according to the Rambam, on two levels. Are women chayv in the Doraita mitzvah, and are women chayv in the Derabbanan mitzvah? So, are women chayv in the mitzvah? The Torah's mitzvah, Zachar Asher Asalucha Amalek. The Sefer HaChinuch says that women are patur for a very interesting reason. We're not sure. So we quote the Sefer HaChinuch. Some suggest that it was the Ra'ah, Rabbeinu Aaron HaLevi, but it's not clear that who wrote the Sefer HaChinuch. So that's why you should call them the Baal Sefer HaChinuch. The Sefer HaChinuch writes that women are patur because only men are chayiv to go to battle. And the mitzvah of Zachar is to put us in the right frame of mind when we go to battle against Amalek. Since men are the only ones who have to go to war, and women don't go to war, they don't have to remember Amalek because they don't have to be put in that right frame of mind. That's the chiddush of the Sefer HaChinuch. The Minchas Chinuch, wrote a parish on the Sefer HaChinuch, the Minchas Chinuch disagrees. And he has a number of questions that he asks on the Sefer HaChinuch. Firstly, he says that on a Doraita level, the mitzvah of Zachar Amalek, as Asher Asalucha Amalek, is a year-round mitzvah. To constantly remember. In which case, it's what kind of mitzvah taseh? No, Shalazman Grama. It's all year long. So it's mitzvah taseh Shalazman Grama. In addition, is the mitzvah lo taseh, of not forgetting. In addition, he says that when it comes to a mechanic mitzvah, the Gemara says that even a kal is yotzei mechupasa. It sounds like even women have to fight the Milchemet Mitzvah. The Rambam clearly states that one of the Milchemot Mitzvah that we have is the Mitzvah against Amalek. So even women have to fight. And fourthly, he says, who in the world told the Sefer Achinuch that the purpose of the Mitzvah to remember what Amalek did is to get us in the right frame of mind for battle? Who says that the two are connected? Maybe we always have to remember what Amalek did, irrelevant of whether I'm going to battle or not. And therefore the Minchas Chinuch disagrees, and he says women are chayiv in the mitzvah of Zohar. Then there are those who argue with the Sefer Achinuch. I mean, one of the things that they argue with the Minchas Chinuch, one of the things they argue about is when the Gemara says that a kala goes out of her chuppah, it doesn't mean that she goes to the battlefront. It means that she has to serve in the home front. She has to provide, send food to the home, to the soldiers, or do other things. But it's not that she's actually going out to fight. So that's one of the arguments they have against the Minchas Chinuch's complaints against the Sefer Chinuch. In any event, the question is, in terms of the bottom line, are women chayav to go here, Parsha Zachar and Shul? This is always a question that comes up. Do women have to hear Parsha Zachar and Shul? Generally speaking, we paskin the women are potter from Kriyas HaTorah all year long. What about from Parsha Zachar? So if women are potter from the Da'oraita of Zachar, like the Sefer Achinuch says, logic dictates that they would also be potter from the Derabbanan edition of hearing it in Shul and Erev, not Erev Purim, but on the Shabbos before Purim. So if the Sefer Achinuch is correct that women are potter from the Doraita, they're probably potter from the additional level of hearing Parsha Zachar. If women are chayav in hearing Zachar, of the Doraita of Zachar, like the Minchas Chinuch says, then maybe they're chayav on the Derabbanan level of a minyan with the Sefer Torah, and maybe on that level they're potter. Certainly according to the opinion of the Rosh, that the Doraita includes the minyan of the Sefer Torah, if women are chayav the Doraita, they have to hear that also. In practical terms, there is a machloket aposkim where the women have to go hear Parsha Zachar and Shul on Shabbos, on the Shabbos before Purim. Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was noted that way, Maral Diskin, and Chassalaz, many, many poskim say, either feel strongly or lean towards saying that women should go hear Parsha Zachar on Shabbos before Purim. And in many shuls, there's actually a second reading for the women, because some women can't get to shul because they have little kids. So 10, 15 minutes after davening is over, they'll have a second reading for the women with the Sefer Torah, and sometimes they arrange to have a minyan. It would be most appropriate under those circumstances to have a minyan to allow the women to come, or alternatively in a area where there's an Eruv that the women can take the baby carriages with them, so the women come to shul at the end of davening. When they come with the baby carriages, the men go outside. Right? They'll watch the kids. The women will then come in, and they'll still have a minyan of men in the shul. On the other hand, the Avnei Nezer, the Kaf HaChayim, Chazon Ish thought that women are potter from hearing Parsha Zachar, and there is no special need for them to come to hear this Kriyas HaTorah more than any other. So I think in many communities over the years it's become customary to try to arrange a separate Kriyas HaTorah for women, and it would be appropriate if women can make it to come to the Kriyas HaTorah. Okay, that's in terms of Parsha Zachar. Tanis Esther, it's a regular year, right? It's not that Purim is on a Sunday or something when you have to make Tanis Esther earlier. Tanis Esther will be on your Gimel Adar. Right? Purim this year is a Tuesday, correct? Tuesday? Purim is a Tuesday. So Tanis Esther will be on Monday, your Gimel Adar. Why do we fast? Not because Esther fasted on your Gimel Adar. Esther actually fasted in Nisan, according to Midrashim. But we fast because on Yud Gimel Adar was the day that actually Haman had warned everybody to go ahead and kill the Jews. And that's the day we fought back. And there was an ancient custom that on the day of Milchama, people actually fasted to do tshuva and then went on to fight. So zechet to the fact that we fought and we fasted to do tshuva, therefore we also fast. And one of the ideas is to realize that if we do proper tshuva, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Bezrat Hashem, be on our side as He was so long ago, 2,500 years ago. Who has to fast? although Tanis Esther is not actually mentioned anywhere in Tanakh explicitly that we have to fast, therefore that fast is a little bit more lenient in terms of the rules. However, anybody who is healthy must fast. It's not an optional fast. If you're healthy, you must fast. However, somebody who isn't so healthy, and you certainly don't have to be in the stage of pikuach nefesh, if you're somewhat ill or not feeling well, then you may be potter from fasting. You should make sure to ask a shayla at chacham, to ask a shayla. But what? So in pregnant women, they're generally, we make a lot many taniyos, certainly in tanit esther. Unless a pregnant woman feels so well, fast so wonderfully, doesn't feel weak at all, right? And it doesn't bother her one bit. All right, so then I'm going to go ahead and fast. But in generally speaking, we don't. We generally tell the pregnant women not to fast, and nursing women the same, because if you're fasting, then your milk supply dries up. It's a regular tannis. It starts. It doesn't start at night. It starts in the morning, and it ends in the evening. Now, usually, we end the tannis by tzeit ha-kochavim. In most places, in most years, so l'chatchila, one shouldn't eat at the end of tannis Esther until after hearing the Megillah. Most of you will ignore that halakha this year, because if you had to wait to hear the Megillah until the Tanis is over, you'd have to wait an additional 24 hours, because as we'll soon talk about, if you'll be in Yerushalayim, you're not going to read the Megillah till Leil Tetvav. So the fast ends when... Okay, the fast ends whenever we pass in Tzeit HaKachavim is, in terms of the fast, they'll probably put up a sign. I didn't check the times yet. Okay, that's in terms of the Tanis Esther. All the other halachas, so the regular things, halacha, you're allowed to shower, meager, then you're allowed to shower. Some people are, probably not this, but some people won't mark for not showering, but you're allowed to shower, but you're allowed to brush your teeth. We discussed once before whether, if you're mitztayer, right, if you're mitztayer and you want to brush your teeth and make sure to spit out, not swallow, you can. Otherwise, if you're not mitztayer, then you should, it's preferable not to brush your teeth or wash your mouth out on a Tanis. There is a custom, Erev Purim, Purim night, done at different times, to give a zecher l'machzit ha-shekel. We know that in order to provide the karbonot ha-tzibur in the Mishkan, later on in the Beit HaMikdash, everyone from Bnei Yisrael used to contribute a machzit ha-shekel. We'll see if everyone in Bnei Yisrael, at least the men, maybe the women, used to contribute a machzit ha-shekel. And the money was, they began to collect the money in Chodesh Adar, and beginning in Chodesh Nisan, they started using the new money. It was the new fiscal year in the Beit HaMikdash, and they used the money to buy the new Karbanos HaTzibur. So there is a custom to give before Purim a Zecha L'machzit HaShekel, and some have a custom, and many have a custom, to give three Machziot HaShekel, because the word Truma appears three times. At the beginning of Parshat Kitisa, the money is given not for the Beis HaMikdash, and it's very important. You shouldn't say this is Machzit HaShekel money, because real Machzit HaShekel money has to go to the Beis HaMikdash. Then we're in big trouble what to do with the money. But it's a Zechel Machzit HaShekel. The money can go to any worthwhile stock that there is. Normally, the custom is to give three coins that are, each one is half of the standard currency, meaning that in America you would give the equivalent of $3.50, in Eretz Yisrael you'd give the equivalent of 3.5 shkalim, I guess in England you'd give the equivalent of 3.50 pence, did I get it right? Right, 3.50 pence. In other words, that's the custom to give whatever the normal coin is, three of them. Are women chayav in this minhag? So it depends whether women actually had to contribute to the machzit ha-shekel in the Beit HaMikdash. It's not so clear. The Rambam and the Sefer HaChinuch were of the opinion that women were potter from giving the machzit ha-shekel based on the pasuk of v'natnu ish kofer nafsho. The Agod Maimonides disagrees. He says that the machzit ha-shekel was also a kind of kapara, and women were chayav in the machzit ha-shekel. So there's some say yes, some say no. From what age do you give? So again, it's machlokes. because it says kol ha'over al ha'pkudim, so it sounds like when you went to war, which was from the age of 20 and up, and others say that the custom is from the age of 13 and up. You have to give from 13 and up. Nowadays, the custom is very widespread. We tend to give zechel ha'machzit ha'shekel for everyone. Even for newborns, and some even give an extra set of machzit ha'shekel for a pregnant woman, even for the ubar. It's certainly not a chiyuv, but the custom is to give, and it's also very common that the head of the household will go and give for everyone. Say the father goes to shul and the mincha erev Purim, so there's a mother, a father, and six kids, so that's eight altogether. And each, if let's say in America where you give three machtiot a shekel, it's a dollar and a half, right? That's 3 half dollars, a dollar and a half. And your eight kids, so the father will come along, he'll give 12 shkalim, $12, or in Eretz Yisrael it'll be 12 shkalim. And he'll give it and he'll have in mind for every single person. That's a very common custom. Time zones don't matter if your parents are doing this for you anyway, so then you can relax and take care, and they'll be taken care of. You may not even pay attention because it could be that they've been doing this all along. And they give it zechel machzit shekel. If for some reason they're not doing it home and you want to give it, so fine. So you can give it. You give it erev Purim, and you can give it to any worthwhile tzedakah. You set aside a shekel and a half. Now you're here in Eretz Yisrael, and you can give it. And the only thing that you may want to say is zechel machzit shekel. Okay. Yeah. That's a minhag, right? Sheyesh liten. I mean, the lashon of the Ramah in Shulchan Aruch is that one should give, but he says yesh omrim sheyesh liten kol dem purim machzit min ha'matbea ha'kavua. So it's a very widespread custom amongst Ashkenazim, amongst Sfardim. Also, to give, yeah. Okay. So it's a very widespread custom.
So if
you're
going to do it.
So if nobody does it, it's kedai to do it. You may not realize that somebody's doing this for you. In other words, I do it for my whole family. I don't tell them beforehand. I just go to shul and it's there, so I just take care of it for everybody. But, and it could be somebody is taking care of it. It could be natural. You can give this. Nothing wrong with giving an extra check on the head. Yeah. So sometimes in shuls, what they do is they'll have three half shekels, wrapped up in a plastic. So you buy it and then return it. In other words, what do? I have to give a dollar and a half. So I throw a dollar and two quarters in, and I buy the $3.50. I pick it up, and then I donate the $3.50 back. What? So they sometimes have it, but you can do it otherwise. It's not, you know, you can really get ahead. If in shul, if I see it's there, so I pick it up. And I, you know, it's a little funny, because if I need to do it for, you know, family of eight, so I pick it up and I put it down eight times. I guess they put it down. You see everybody doing that. But it's not really required. You can just give. Okay. Now, Purim. I always say it's a little strange, you know, in Chutz La'aretz, of course, you celebrate 2 days Yom Tov, Yom Tov Sheni Shel Galuyos. You come to Eretz Yisrael, it's 1 day Yom Tov. In Chutz La'aretz, it's 1 day Purim, right? You come here to Eretz Yisrael, all of a sudden Purim is on 2 days. So, we'll have to discuss, if you would have been here last year, you would have had a Purim Meshulash, you would have had a 3 day Purim. So now, what's going on with 2 days Purim? The Megillah tells us that Haman had done the Goral, and the 13th of Adar was the day that the Jews were going to all be killed. That was the day Mordechai and Esther sent out letters saying that we should defend ourselves, and instead we killed the all the people of Haman's people, and anybody else was trying to kill us, so we went and Bala Hargachash came to Hargo. We fought on the 13th and we rested on the 14th. And therefore the day of celebration was not the 13th because we were still fighting. The day of celebrating was the 14th. However, in the city of Shushan, where there seemed to be an extra concentration of Haman's goons, called, that's a nice term. So we asked permission to fight an additional day, and we got permission. So we fought on the 13th and the 14th, and therefore we rested on the 15th. So in Shushan they celebrated on the 15th. The rest of the empire celebrated on the 14th. Chazal wanted to commemorate both days of celebration. And therefore they said, we'll commemorate in most places in the world on the 14th, but in some places we should commemorate on the 15th. So when are we going to commemorate on the 15th? So he said, Shushan was a walled city, and therefore say any walled city will celebrate on the 15th as opposed to the 14th. So we really should make it any city that was a walled city in the time of Achashverosh would celebrate like the city of Shushan. However, Chazal didn't choose walled cities from the time of Achashverosh because at that point Eretz Yisrael was desolate. And there wasn't a single city in Eretz Yisrael that had a standing wall. Because it was after Churban Bayit Rishon, before Bayit Sheni. And therefore there was no city with a standing wall. If we were Lidorot to commemorate, you know, walled cities from the time of Achashverosh, we take a look and nowhere in Eretz Yisrael would there ever be anybody celebrating on the 15th and would remind us of the Churban. We didn't want to remind of the Churban. So therefore we chose a time when there were walled cities. And we chose the time of Yehoshua ben Nun. Any city that was a walled city from the time of Yehoshua ben Nun, who actually was the first person to fight against Amalek, would celebrate on the 15th. And that's the day. Any city that's a walled city from the time of Yehoshua ben Nun celebrates on the 15th. Every other city celebrates on the 14th. There's one exception to the rule. There's one city that wasn't walled in the time of Yeshua and yet still celebrates on the 15th. That's the city of Shushan. I don't know if there are any, not that many Jews left in Iran these days. Anyway, there is a city on the map in Iran called Susa. I'm not sure if Susa is ancient Shushan, but if it was, then, if it is, then Jews who live there actually would still be celebrating on the 15th. What cities are walled cities from the time of Yehoshua ben Nun? There's only one city in the entire world where we are certain that A, it had a wall at the time of Yehoshua, and B, the city is in the same location. It's not, because it's not enough to say that, oh, I don't know, the city of Jericho had a wall at the time of Yeshua, because we're quite certain it did have a wall. Not for long, but it had a wall at the time of Yeshua. But now the question is Jericho nowadays in the same location that Jericho was 3,000 years ago? Or is it, you know, is it a few kilometers distance, and we just called it Jericho because it's nearby, but it's not the, it's only one city in the world that's in the same place, and we're sure that it had a wall city, a wall there, and that is Yerushalayim. So Yerushalayim is the only place that's Vadai, Book of Chomim, Mot Yehoshua ben Nun. There are a whole bunch of cities that are questionable. Hebron, Tveria, Yafo, Yericho, Akko, Tzvat. There are some Achronim who even thought that Prague, Czechoslovakia, which was an ancient city, might have had a wall at the time of Yehoshua. I don't know if anybody really paskins that way. La Alochin in Czechoslovakia, there are Jews who live in Prague. But it's mentioned in the Poskim, maybe it did. Now, yeah. Okay, so we'll get to it in a moment. Any city that's definitely, any city, meaning Yerushalayim, which is definitely a Mukav Chomim Mot Yehoshua, celebrates the Mitzvot Hayom on the 15th and not on the 14th. Any city that's definitely not Mukav Chomim Mot Yehoshua celebrates on the 14th and not on the 15th. Those few cities where there is a Safek, where it's not clear, generally speaking, they will read the Megillah with the Bracha on the 14th. And read it again on the 15th, but without a bracha. They will also be mekayim the mitzvot hayom, if there's a real safek, they'll do mishloach manos on both days, and matanos lavyonim on both days, have a suda on both days. But not too many places are in this category of safek. Now, Mir asks, what's Yerushalayim? What's Yerushalayim? The Gemara says that any walled city and anything that's within a short distance of the walled city reads like the walled city. And the short distance is generally, we consider it to be a mil, a distance of 2,000 amot, approximately 1 kilometer. There were poskim in Yerushalayim who felt that you figured out where the ancient wall of the city ended, where the ancient world and city was, you measure 2,000 amot, and you stop. Radius of 2,000 amot, and you stop. And wherever you stop, that's the border. Which means, in theory, one side of the street could be celebrating on Tetzvav, and the other side of the street, which is right past the border, would be celebrating on Yudalot. That was the opinion of Rav Tukhatsinsky. It's also Shmuel Salant's opinion, the Azaret's opinion. The Azaret was of Cook's father-in-law. And there is still a shul in the Shchunah Beit Chaim. I don't know if you know Shchunah Beit Chaim is. It was Rav Tukhatsinsky's shul, from what I understand. And they read the Megillah on Yudalot. Because that shul was his shul, they follow his idea. That's the only shul in Yerushalayim, pretty much. That reads only in the main part of Yerushalayim. Bizmanenu, the present-day poskim, have rejected this opinion, even though it wasn't so strange 60, 70 years ago. And most poskim feel that as long as there's continuous housing, it can continue and it keeps on going. And therefore, almost all of the shchunot in Yerushalayim, almost all the neighborhoods in greater Yerushalayim, read on Tetzvav and not on Yudalot. The first year that Harnof was populated, I wasn't here yet, but I heard there were major, major discussions. You have to realize, when Harnof was populated, basically Yerushalayim ended at Givat Shaul, right around here. Kanfei Nesharim was a ghost town. There was probably still some of those industrial things on Beit HaDfus, the street behind Kanfei Nesharim, where they have these car mechanics, garages, etc. But there were no regular stores, there were no regular housing, and there was just empty space until you got to Harnof. And there were whole big discussions, does Harnof read on Yudalot or Tetzvav, because there wasn't continuous housing. And I understand that as Purim got closer, day by day, they used to get different Piskei Halacha. So yes, no, maybe, this, that. Then it came like, Tanasetsu, it was hour by hour, right? You know, at 8 o'clock in the morning, this talking, at 9 o'clock, they this. I think Rav Avadi Yosef paskened originally, in that first year, that in Harnof, they should read on Yudalot, and not on Tetzvav. By now, all the poskim agreed, because there's continuous, and it's straight with the stores and the this, so everyone agrees on Harnof. Almost all the shchunot are definitely Tetzvav. The one shchunah, major area, that's somewhat questionable is Ramot. There are areas of Ramot that are really not, there isn't continuous housing to get there. It may depend also on Ramot Bet versus Ramot Aleph. Remember that. So, if Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was of the opinion that anything that was in Yerushalayim Eruv, in fact anything that was in the Yerushalayim municipality, by definition, read on Tetzvav. There are some poskim who disagree. I don't know nowadays. I know that up until a few years ago, at least, there were some shuls in Ramot that actually celebrated both days, Misafek, both Yudalot and Tetzvav. Most people, I think, celebrate on Tetzvav, but if you're invited to relatives in Ramot, you better check which day they celebrate. Of course, depending on which Ramot it is, different things. For some reason, one of the most controversial places in Eretz Yisrael, even more than Yerushalayim, is Mevaseret. Mevaseret is officially not part of the Jerusalem municipality. It's officially, it's a separate city. However, before the mall got built, the Mevaseret mall, they were almost, aside from a few makolot, there were almost no facilities in Mevaseret. And therefore, people looked at Mevaseret as really being part of Yerushalayim. And there were poskim, there were rabbanim in Mevaseret. And the rabbanim in Mevaseret actually paskin that you had to celebrate on Tetzvav and not on Yudalot. Then they built the mall. And all of a sudden, Mevaseret was less dependent on Yerushalayim, was acting more independently. It's very hard to get up in front of your shul and say, listen, we used to celebrate on Tetzvav, but now we have a mall, so we're celebrating on Yudalot. So there still is kind of, I think they still officially, the official psak in Mevaseret, I think is still to celebrate on Tetzvav. I don't know what they do in the yeshiva. At one point in the yeshiva, they used to have two minyanim. They used to read both on Yudalit and on Tetzvav. They read on Yudalit because they really felt that Yudalit was the appropriate way, but they did it on Tetzvav because that was the official psak. Then I heard that the Rabbanim were not happy that they made an official minyan on Yudalit, so they don't make one big official minyan on Yudalit. They were dividing up, they would like split the guys up into 10 different Kolnik houses or something, and then they would read in each of the houses on Yudalit. I don't know exactly what goes on there. But there still is to this day a bit of a controversy on Vaseret. I'm not sure, I think, I can check with Rabbi Feldman, but I think that they still celebrate officially Tetzvav in Vaseret. Okay, now, the traveler. Some of the most complicated questions come up regarding somebody who lives in a walled city and goes to a non-walled city, or in a non-walled city and goes into a walled city. We will use the Gemara's terminology, a ben ir and a ben krach. Krach means the walled city, ben ir is the non-walled city. Or we can call them, talk about a Yerushalmi who goes to Tel Aviv, or a Tel Aviv who goes to Yerushalayim, that kind of thing. Krach, ben krach is a walled city person, ben ir is a non-walled city person. There's a basic disagreement, there's some disagreement between Mishneh Berurah and the Chazon Ish. I'm going to go through the way Mishneh Berurah paskins on the issue. He says as follows. We have a ben krach, meaning Yerushalmi. He arrives in the city, in an ear, before Alot HaShachar on Yud Dalet. Okay, he arrives in a non-walled city before Alot HaShachar and Yudalit, and when Alot HaShachar happens, he's in a non-walled city.
This is the Ben
Krach. He is called a Paruz Ben Yomo. He is a Ben Ir for the day, and he is Chayef to hear Megillah on Yudalit. So, what this means is as follows. You are all this year Yerushalmi. Your permanent residence is here in Yerushalayim. If on Purim night, Yudalit, the night after Tanis Esther, meaning on Tanis Esther is Monday, right? On Monday night, you decide to sleep over in Beit Shemesh. Going over to Beit Shemesh, you're going to sleep over in Beit Shemesh. Which means you will be in Beit Shemesh on Alot HaShachar Tuesday morning. Then you're chayav to hear Megillah on Tuesday. Which means you're not only chayav to hear Megillah on Tuesday morning, you're really chayav to hear Megillah also Monday night. Because you became a paros for the day, you became a ben ir for the day. And you're chayav to hear Megillah Monday night, you're chayav to hear Megillah Tuesday morning, and you're chayav to do Suda and Matanas Lavyon and all the mitzvahs. If then, on Tuesday afternoon, you came back to Yerushalayim, and were in Yerushalayim at Alot HaShachar Wednesday morning, notice you slept over in the dorm Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, you have to hear Megillah again. And you have to do Mitzvot HaYom again. Meaning that you would be Chayav in Megillah four times. Monday night, Tuesday. Tuesday night, Wednesday. If, however, you go to visit Beit Shemesh on Tuesday after Alot HaShachar, in other words, Tanis Esther is Monday. Monday night you slept in the dorm. When Alot HaShachar, when dawn broke on Tuesday morning, you were in Yerushalayim. At 10 o'clock in the morning, you went to visit Beit Shemesh. It's fine. You can go visit Beit Shemesh. You're not chayv in Megillah. You're not chayv in Alanis. You're not chayv in Matanos Lavion. You're not chayv in Sud. You're not chayv in Shloach Manos. It's not your Purim. And then you come back Tuesday afternoon back to the dorm. So then Tuesday night, Wednesday will be your Purim. So now, what happens if a person says like this? I'll sleep over in Yerushalayim Monday night. So Tuesday morning, Yudalit morning, Alot HaShachar in Yerushalayim. Do I celebrate Yudalit? No. Tuesday afternoon, I'll go to Beit Shemesh, and I'll sleep over in Beit Shemesh. And when Wednesday morning Alot HaShachar happens, I'm in here, so I'm not chayiv like a krach. So I won't have Yudal and I won't have Tedvav. So there was a certain person, well-known person, somewhat of a philosopher here in Eretz Yisrael, who conceptually didn't like Purim. And they say about him that this is what he would do. He didn't want to celebrate it. So I heard the shame Rav Neubert, the author of Shmuel Shabbos Kechusa. So somebody who does that is what Chazal referred to as a novel b'shus haTorah. The famous Ramban at the beginning of Parshas Kedoshim, that the person uses some technicalities of the halacha, right? To say, I didn't violate any halacha, but he's a disgusting person. That's a novel b'shus haTorah, which is awesome. Right? He says that somebody who does that deliberately is a novel b'shus haTorah. Somebody does it literally, is novel b'shus haTorah. So I forgot who it was. Somebody told me it actually happened to him, but it wasn't. What was the story? He had the reverse situation. Okay, let's talk about the reverse situation. You have a Tel Avivi, right? Or a Beit Shemeshite, somebody who's a Ben Ear. Right? If he goes, for him to be Chayav, so he has to be Yuddal and Alot HaShach, he has to be in his city. If the Tel Avivi comes to Yerushalayim on Tanit Esther, and on the morning of Yuddalit, where is he? He's in Yerushalayim. So then, he's not Chayav like a Ben Ear, because he's in Yerushalayim. If he were, if he were to go out of Yerushalayim back to Beit Shemesh on Yudalit afternoon and be out of Yerushalayim on Tedvav morning, then also if you pass, and I think someone told me what was the story. His wife went into labor on Tanis Esther. He didn't live in Yerushalayim. His wife went into labor on Tanis Esther. He went to the hospital with her, which was in Yerushalayim. So he was there Leil Yudalit and Yom Yudalit in the morning. And then Yudalit in the afternoon, he went back. His wife gave birth, and then he went back to where he was, but he wasn't Chayv Megillah there. And he had other kids at home, and he had to spend the night, and he spent the night there, so he had to, I don't know exactly what he did. In the end, somehow or another, I don't know if he missed Purim, I think he told me he missed Purim. He just had to go back with his kids, and by the time he realized what was going on, he blew it. In any event, this is the way the Mishnah Berurah more or less paskins. The Chazon Ish has certain different opinions. There are other poskim who have, there are nuances within the halacha. In practical terms, what you have to remember is as follows. You should be here Tuesday night, Wednesday morning. That's pretty much clear. You should be sleeping over in the dorm and you'll be chayiv like a real Yerushalmi. If you decide to sleep outside Yerushalayim Monday night, Tuesday, just realize.
These are the numbers. Like the Tuesday is Yudal,
what day? So Tuesday is Yudal.
So you should be sleeping in Yerushalayim.
So you should be sleeping in Yerushalayim Leil Tedvav. The Achagig is Tuesday night. Achagig is Tuesday night, Wednesday. That's when Yerushalayim is celebrating. You should be sleeping over in Yerushalayim Tuesday night, Wednesday morning.
You have to do that in Yerushalayim.
You'll have, right. So, depending on exactly when, let's see now, it's probably close around 6:30 or something like that. I know that Rabbi Katz very often has people coming to his house for the Su'uda. Now, it's his Su'uda, but it's not your Su'uda. Because right? If you slept over in the dorm here, Monday night, Tuesday morning, then you don't have to celebrate your Yudalit. But he very often has a lot of girls who come anyway. to celebrate his Su'uda. It's not yours. He deliberately makes his Su'uda earlier in the afternoon to finish in time to get you back to hear Megillah. So you should make sure, don't miss Megillah, it's very important. So you have to be back here in time. If you plan to sleep out Leil Yudala, which means Monday night, outside Yerushalayim, then you're going to end up being Chayav four times. Okay.
So why is it so specific on the time? Like it has to be
Halacha Shachar, so the question is, see, the question within Halacha is what defines you? The Gemara says that there's a thing of being a bent ear for the day. You can be a bent ear for the day. So what makes you the bent? What time point? What point in time makes you the bent ear for the day? What point do you say, now this is it? So very often Halacha Shachar is Kaveya. But again, there are different posts going to say different things. This is more or less according to Mishnah Berurah. Yeah.
And you were trying to make sure, so if you, let's say you did the whole Sinyan thing, you're Chayav four times, so you could make Bracha as well.
You're actually Chayav four times.
Right.
You want to sleep over in your cousin and your B'nai Brak, but remember, if you do that, you have to hear Megillah Leil Yudala, not only Yom. So you'll have to get to B'nai Brak. It's not a problem. There are no classes. You'll have Tanis Esther in the afternoon. There are no classes. So you can go out there. The only thing is that you'll have to hear Megillah four times. And although we all love to hear Megillah, which we do, the Gemara says we like the story of Megillah. But going through it four times may seem a little tedious to people, especially since you're really high, you have to hear every word. You know, eating two su'udot may not be a problem for some people.
You have to give the
first word,
and then
tell yourself, well, right. It's not so, how big a deal is it? It's not such a big deal. Yeah.
I'm like,
Because the Gemara says that regarding these halachos, right, you could be a person for the day. The Gemara says you can be a ben parah, a riprozal with the unwalled city. So there is this concept that regarding the gil, it depends where you are for the day.
Only
right. And regarding the mitzvot hayom, it's not a matter of the minute where you came from, where you're going, it's where you are. Okay, yes.
Can you have to hear it? Like
when
you go, like,
you have
to hear at night,
and
not more than
95
in the morning.
In other words, Asnat goes to visit her relatives in B'nai Brak on Tanit Esther,
right.
Monday afternoon.
Exactly.
She goes to their house and she breaks it. They're going to shul Monday night, and so she goes to shul with them Monday night. And then she comes back to the door Monday night.
Yeah.
Makes it back by curfew. Okay. So she wakes up Tuesday morning, she's in Yerushalayim.
Yeah.
So she was never chayav to hear Megillah. So she went to shul.
Right.
So she went to shul, she heard a Megillah, she's not chayav. She wasn't the Baal Koreh, presumably. She didn't read the Megillah, read it from Kanievsky's women's Megillah reading, right? Yeah. So, get to that's right, you can. Right? You can't recite brachos. If you're not sure, the question is alanisim, but alanisim is not ma'akev. In other words, okay. Now, women and Megillah reading. Of course, at first glance, one would have thought that women should be potter from Kriyas HaMegillah, because what kind of mitzvah is Kriyas HaMegillah? Mitzvah Taseh Shazman Grava. However, the Gemara Megillah states quite clearly that women are chayav in Nigra Megillah, and for the famous reason, Sha'afei Hayubalto Anes, because they too were involved in the miracle. The Rashbam learns that they were not only involved in the miracle, but they brought about the miracle. Obviously, Esther, and other opinion in Tosfot is not so much that they brought it about, not denying Esther's role, just saying that Sha'afei Hayubalto Anes means they benefited from the miracle, and therefore they do have to celebrate. Now, can a woman be motzi a man in Megillah? In other words, for instance, can you read the Megillah for your grandfather? Your grandfather's home, he's ill, he's not well, he can't get to shul. You want to read the Megillah for him. So can you be motzi a man in Kriyas HaMegillah? We're not talking about an unsanua situation, I'm talking about in the shul. The other issue is not just time you want to read the Megillah for your grandfather. So you're allowed to or not. So this is a machloket harishon. Rashi and the Rambam write that there is no difference in the chiyuv between a man and a woman when it comes to Megillah. And if there is no difference, can a woman be motzi a man?
Yeah.
Yes. For instance, it says in Shulchan Aruch, a woman can motzi a man in Kiddush, because they have the same obligation. So the Rashi and the Rambam learn that women have the same obligation, and therefore a woman can be motzi man. The Baal Halachos Gedolot, commonly known as the Bahag by his Rashi Tevos, writes that a woman cannot be motzi a man in Kriyat HaMegillah because a woman's obligation is not quite the same as a man. The lashon of the Bahag is that women are chayev in Shmia and men are chayev in Kriya. What this means is not 100% clear. There are different explanations given. Some say that everyone agrees that the Megillah, Halach Lamaisa, has to be read from a cloth. You can't just say it by heart. But on a the chiyuv for to read from a cloth was a greater chiyuv for men than it is for women. Men were chayev almost on a divrei Kabbalah level. Women were chayev only on a derabbanan level, and therefore their levels are not quite the same. And a woman cannot be motzi man in Kriyat HaMegillah. At least not motzi him totally. The Mechaber in Shulchan Aruch quotes two opinions. Both say man can be motzi a woman and cannot. He seems to be leaning towards the Rambam's opinion that she could. The Ramah writes, however, that we're choshish for the Da'at of Bahag, for the opinion of Bahag, and therefore we don't have women reading Megillah for men. Okay. Now, of course, if the only person in the world to read the Megillah for your grandfather was you, then you should definitely read for him, because according to the Rashi and the Rambam, he fulfills the mitzvah, and even according to the others, he might partially fulfill the mitzvah, even if not totally. But of course, if there is another man available, then we should be certain that he'll fulfill the mitzvah totally, and therefore we should have a man read it for your grandfather. There's a very strange Korban Natana, quoted by the Mishnah Berurah and the Shaar HaTzion. Korban Natana was one of the Mefarshim on the Rosh many centuries ago, who says that it's not appropriate that a woman read Megillah for many women. Now, not reading, for a woman can't be multi men, I understand. But why can't a woman be multi many women? He doesn't say they can't be. He says it's not appropriate that a woman should read Megillah for many women. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach had great difficulty understanding this Korban Natana. He thinks that there's a bit of a misunderstanding of a Tosfot, the Masechet Sukkah, that this is based on. And he didn't quite understand what would be technically the problem of a woman reading Megillah for many women. For instance, you're in a situation where a number of women couldn't get to shul, and you're the only one around, and you haven't had Megillah so to read for them. So Korban Tanel says it's not appropriate. He doesn't say they're not yotze. He says zila b'milta. It's like, so you'd say in Yiddish, sapatnisht. It's inappropriate. But Shlomo Zalman Auerbach didn't quite understand why. There's even a somewhat stranger psak of the Magen Avraham, quoting a Medrash Hanela, very strange Medrash, that he says that it's l'chatchila, a woman shouldn't even read the Megillah for herself. Very strange psak. If a woman is reading Megillah for herself, or reading Megillah for other women, or a man's reading Megillah for other women, there's a question, what bracha do women make? If their obligation is precisely the same as the men's obligation, then what bracha should they make? Same bracha. Al Mikra Megillah. If women's obligation is different, does the bracha change? So there are different opinions. There are more rights that they should make a bracha not al mikra megillah but lishmoa megillah. The Rambam writes lishmoa megillah, and that's what Shlomo Zalman Auerbach paskens as well. And the Mishnah Berurah quotes that opinion, one of two opinions he quotes.
Is she reading?
If either she's reading it, if the megillah is being read only for women, then one woman should make the bracha for everybody and make the bracha lishmoa megillah, not al mikra megillah. In one other place, the Mishnah Berurah writes Lishmoa Mikra Megillah, and the Vilna Gaon was of the opinion that she should make the same bracha as men, Al Mikra Megillah.
But if it's just like a normal shul, they just...
Well, it's for men and women, so that she certainly yotze with the Al Mikra, with the generic bracha. But if it's an only women thing,
so why would you say
Bahag of Lishma? If, because according to the Bahag, the women are chayv in Shmiya, not in Kriya, So then they'll all make a bracha on Mikra Megillah, but Lishma Megillah. Yes, no, that's good. Either it's because they have the same level of obligation.
Would you have to read it with the
child,
or just you just read it out?
Technically, preferably, every anybody who's reading the Megillah should read it with the proper cantillation, with the proper trump, as they say. The Tamei Mikra. That's preferable. But one is Yotze, if you read it, by Hibi Mea Chashverosh, Ua Chashverosh, as long as the word's pronounced correctly, yes.
Who said Lishmoa Megillah?
Lishmoa Megillah. It would be if they have the Megillah reading that's only women, one woman should say it for everyone. No, if a man is reading Megillah, there were years that I read, my wife wasn't able to get to shul, so I would read the Megillah for her, she would recite the bracha. Now there is a somewhat halachic, somewhat hashkafa question, which we're not going to deal with a great length, because we don't have time to deal with great length, and that is organizing a Megillah reading for women, by women, exclusively women, etc. Now, in many communities, there's a Megillah reading for women, because they can't make it to shul because of little kids, but they usually have a man who reads the Megillah. Sometimes it's in the shul, sometimes it's in his house, and he reads the Megillah for women. Everyone who reads is fine, 100% okay. The question is, should one organize a Megillah reading for women by women? This becomes somewhat controversial, and everybody gets involved in it, and they start talking yes, and no, and yes. There are certain... I saw anecdotal evidence that Rav Soloveitchik was not very happy about this idea. He just felt that it's as a policy issue. He didn't think that this was so wise.
So we have so much time again.
Rosh Hashanah was talking in theory in general. Rosh Hashanah wasn't talking about public policy. He's saying, in theory, if one woman wanted to read for a couple of women, you know, he didn't see a problem with it. What we're talking about is organizing, right? Organizing l'chatchila, a women's Megillah reading. Right? A public women's Megillah reading for all the women, bedafka. I don't know what Rav Shlomo Zalman said about the issue, but I can't imagine he would have been too happy about it. But I don't know. So eventually I read some stories, certain incidents that happened that he was not happy about it at all. But it does occur in some communities where it's done. In other communities it's not done, and in some communities it's done without the rabbi's approval.
But I don't understand why he doesn't like it, because it's like, really, we should be saying it's a bracha.
No, he's not. No one said that the women are guilty with the men's bracha. It's just that if it's only for women, so should you change the nusach bracha?
So why does your wife say bracha?
Because first of all, I was already yotze. I already heard it in shul. I just come home to read it for her.
So,
what? Would I be able to? It's not a question about ravens, because you saw them, because I say the bracha, but it's better, since I'm not being yotze now with the Megillah, because I already heard it, that the one who's being yotze should say the bracha. That would be most appropriate.
So, wasn't there a thing
that
a girl should read it to herself?
No, there's nobody who says a girl should not read it to herself. Everyone agrees that there's a certain degree of preference. On the contrary, there's an Indian of Barov Am Hadrat Melech. Specifically regarding Megillah, not many things, but specifically regarding Megillah. And therefore, it's preferable to hear the Megillah in a large gathering than in a smaller gathering. Now, if the large gathering is very noisy and the smaller gathering is less noisy, or if I'm sick and I can't make it to the larger gathering, that's a different story. But it is preferable to hear it in the larger gathering rather than to break up into smaller gatherings of Megillah reading. But that's the thing here. Generally speaking, we encourage the girls to go to Merkaz to hear Kriyat Megillah. Okay, some of the dinim regarding Kriyat Megillah. One is allowed to sit during Kriyat Megillah. Technically speaking, even the Baal Kore could sit, although Mishum Kavod HaTzibur, the custom is that the Baal Kore stands. However, if the Baal Kori is reading in a private reading, I'm reading for my wife, and somebody's reading for a few members of his family, and it's not a public tzibur reading, then even the Balkore can sit. There is a great degree of controversy regarding, and I spoke about this one of the other classes, about listening to Kriyat HaMegillah over a microphone. The problem is that you have to hear the direct voice of the person who's reading, and not an electronic imitation of the person's voice. For instance, everyone agrees that you can't tape record a Megillah reading, right, and then play it back on Leil Purim and be yotze. Because you're not hearing the person reading it, you're being yotze with a tape recorder, and the tape recorder is not chayav mitzvah. So, therefore you can't be yotze. It is also fairly clear that you cannot be yotze with a radio broadcast. Although they do read the Megillah over the radio, and if you could be yotze with a radio broadcast, it would be wonderful, because all these elderly, sick people who couldn't get the shul could just tune into the right station. It would be wonderful if it would work. But the radio broadcast, which is often a delayed radio broadcast, if things are somewhat delayed, it's really not hearing the person's voice. The question is regarding a microphone. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, who was the Ashkenazi Rav Rashi in Yerushalayim for many years, was leaning in the direction of allowing Megillah over microphone. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was vehemently against it, saying that simply it's you're not yotze, yedei chova, one cannot hear, one cannot be yotze the kriya of Megillah if you heard it over microphone. Now, if you're in a shul with a microphone and you're close enough to hear it without the microphone, it's just louder with the microphone, then that wouldn't be a problem. But if you're sitting at a distance where without the microphone you wouldn't hear it, then you're not yotze by hearing it through a microphone, and it can be a problem in some shuls. So you have to be careful about that. If you're sitting close enough, well, hopefully close enough that it would strain and you would have been able to hear everything. So then now that it's louder, so you're still yotze. Okay. Now one should of course have in mind to be yotze with the kriya of the shliach tzibur and with his brachos. In shul generally only the balkore makes the brachot. There are three brachot: amikra megillah, shasanisim, and shachianu. The balkore makes them out loud. We yotze and we all answer amen. You have mind to be yotze with his brachos and his kriya. Megillah is not like Kriya Satara. You miss the word in Kriya Satara, you miss the word in Kriya Satara. You miss something in Mikra Megillah, finished. It's an all or nothing proposition, Mikra Megillah. And you'll have to hear the whole thing over again. Now, what can you do if you miss something? What can you do if you miss something? So, the Megillah has to be read from a kosher cloth. And therefore, if I have a kosher cloth in front of me, so I can read the Megillah from the kosher cloth, I'm fine with yotze. I don't have a kosher cloth in front of me, I have a printed chumash. If I read the Megillah from printed chumash, printed Tanakh, I'm not yotze. However, if I only read a small amount of the Megillah from a printed Tanakh, and the vast majority I hear from a cloth, being read from a cloth, so I am yotze. And therefore, if I miss 2-3 words, I didn't hear the chazan, the balkore, can I make up those 2-3 words on my own? Yeah, I can read those 2-3 words from a printed chumash on my own and be yotze. But I have to hear everything in order. So it means that if I miss 2-3 words, I'm going to have to read probably 5-6 words, because I'll have to catch up to where the Balkore is and maybe be a half a word ahead of him and then do it. So for instance, if I miss Pasuk Gimel, I can't wait till after Pasuk Dalet, when there's a lot of noise for Haman, go back to read Pasuk Gimel and then continue Pasuk Hay, because then I read Pasuk Dalet Gimel Hay, King Not Yotze. I would have to read Gimel Dalet or Gimel Dalet Hay, quickly catch up, and then continue on. So a little means that, first of all, the majority of the Kriya I have to heard from a cloth, and I can't miss like an entire section, like a major section. But a couple of psukim, usually you don't miss a couple of psukim, usually you miss maximum a pasuk. Like you miss a few words and you catch up by a pasuk. But it's very important, and you have to hear Megillah Allah Seder. Do you make it a lot less later? Yeah. Okay. We have a custom. Many have a custom to read four psukim of the Megillah out loud. In other words, the Baal Kori stops. Everyone reads those four psukim, and then the Baal Kori repeats them. Because the psukim ishu di ayav shushan abira shmo mordechai ben yarvin shem ben kishi shemini mordechai yatsa min lefnei hamelach b'luhush malchut, when he leaves Achashverosh's palace, having become the new prime minister, like Yehuda v'hayta arv simcha v'sasa v'ikar. And the last pasuk of the Megillah, ki mordechai yehudi mishne lemelach Achashverosh. So again, generally Baal Kori pauses, we read the psukim, and then the Baal Kori repeats them. Some places have a custom that also the 10 B'nai Haman are also read by the individual. And in other words, the Chazan stops before it says B'nai Haman, and then we read the 10 B'nai Haman, and then the Chazan says them. Why the 10 B'nai Haman is an interesting thing. Some say because there's a custom to read the 10 B'nai Haman in one breath, we're afraid that almost guaranteed we're going to miss a word from the Baal Kori because he's reading it so quickly. So that's why we all say it. Some say it's because we should read in one breath. Every person should try to read in one breath. So that's the thing. If you don't make it in one breath, don't worry about it. It's not mocking. What?
They can barely even get through the words.
Okay. That's Pasha Dasa, that's Dalfon, that's Vaisasa, that's the same thing. Interesting names. There is an ancient. There is an old custom to bang when it comes to the recitation of Haman's name. They used to take two sticks of wood and write Haman on it and then bang them together. There are places that used to write Haman at the bottom of their shoes. It used to go like this. The Ramah writes that one should not be mevatel in a custom. You shouldn't be mezalzel in the custom. It's an old custom. You shouldn't make fun of it. However, that custom is not more important than hearing Megillah. And it's more important to hear Megillah. So you have to be careful. And some shuls that are run well, they'll announce that there's a certain amount, it's a few seconds that will allow for each Haman. And then they go on. So it's nice to make noise to keep the custom, but you shouldn't be the one that, you know, just as the Baal Kori starts again, so you're the wise guy who sets off the siren, starts shooting, or, you know, who takes those huge things to use at ball games, and they start those trumpets, with the foghorn, the car alarm, you said, oh yeah. So it's nice, you know, and sure to have, it's very nice to keep up the custom, and you have a, you know, 2 seconds, 3 seconds, whatever it might be, but especially in many places, maybe not here in Yerushalayim, but in many places people are still fasting at night, and you have to keep that in mind, and you're able to be Mekayim Bok Menagim. Although I didn't see quoted in Poskim and Hilchos, in Hilchos Pur, but certainly in Hilchos Bein Adam L'Chavero, there's a lot to keep in mind. Cap guns give off a lot of smoke. And so it's annoying for some people. For people with asthma, it's more than just annoying. And I know in many shuls, some shuls at least, they ban cap guns for that reason, and I think that they should ban cap guns for that reason. Anything that gives off lots of smoke and lots of noise. There was a horrible accident many years ago. I was here already in Arnulf, where a girl's costume caught on fire. If you ever take a look at these costumes there, which are often like Halloween costumes, etc., they write on the packaging, extremely flammable. And this girl was seriously, she survived, but she was seriously burned from, I don't know whether it was a spark of a cap gun or something that caught her thing on fire. It was a terrible accident. And one has to be extremely careful about these things. So in general in Purim, you have to be careful. Certainly, we're not talking about the drinking on Purim and the accidents that happened many, many years ago. There was I don't know if anybody was involved in drinking. I don't know why it happened. There was a young boy who was killed in Muncie many years ago on Purim night. I'm not sure if drinking was involved. Maybe just whatever is an accident, who knows. But you have to be extremely careful about all these things, and certainly with the noise, etc. It's very nice to be Mekayim the Minhag. I remember I was a little kid, for some reason we happened to have been with my family in Manhattan. We davened in the Spanish Portuguese synagogue, which is a very, very proper place. Sorry, I had a cap gun. I brought a grogger. It's a little, you know, those metal little groggers. So I get to the first Haman and I do my little guy, shh. It was horrible. I couldn't even use a grogger. You know, you're picking on a 7-year-old kid, you know, that means nothing. You know, like, I think maybe they went like this. It was just me. So within limits, right? We should allow the kids. It's good. Listen, we want the kids to get involved in porn. We want the adults, etc. The problem is that it's usually the adults who act more like the kids than the kids do. Those are the ones you have to worry about.
They
actually
have separate readings. They have an adult reading where they control the noise and like it's only a couple seconds, and they have a separate children's reading that they let them go for longer and tell them to take. It takes longer, but at least the kids who aren't
tired,
they miss one word. It's not.
And the adults want to act like shit.
So they
stand
up in the air and
they're
thinking, like, physically, like, what's going to face
down,
but you're
hearing
it.
So, okay. In other words, Meikar Adin, you're Yotze. In other words, if you didn't fall asleep, literally, if you didn't fall asleep, Meikar Adin, you're Yotze. But you should try to pay attention. It is not easy, going from personal experience, it's not easy to concentrate on every single word. Right? And sometimes you find yourself that you didn't fall asleep, but you're following along word by word with your finger, but you're not paying attention to what's going on. So l'chatchila, you should try to pay attention. Are you still yotze? Yes, as long as you didn't fall asleep. Okay.
Should you try to, like, read the words
if you have a Megillah? Well, if you have a cloth Megillah in front of you, so that's better, so then you read the words. If you have a printed Chumash, so it's a little bit more problematic. Sometimes people have a cloth Megillah, will read along with the Balkari to help their concentration. You can't do that if you have a printed Chumash. You can't read along the whole Megillah with the Balkari, because then you're paying attention to more what you're saying than what he's saying. Regarding the brachos, you already mentioned that there are three brachos that are recited at night. There is a question whether you recite Shachianu again during the day.
What about if Shachianu, if you do it,
so you would only say it probably wouldn't be repeated, probably. There's a question whether you recite Shachianu during the day, because on the one hand, you already said Shachianu at night. You already said Shachianu on the mitzvah. How many times do you have to say Shachianu on the mitzvah? Like Hanukkah. We say the first time we light Hanukkah candles, we say Shachianu. The first day we in El Telulah, we say Shachianu. We don't do it every time. So the first time you read Megillah, which is at night, and during the day, you shouldn't have to repeat Shachianu. And in fact, that's the meaning of Svardim, that during the day, there's no Shachianu during the day. Ashkenazim, based, I think, if I remember correctly, Rabbi Notam, say that one does say Shachianu during the day, because the Iker reading, the Gemara seems to say that the main reading is the daytime reading. Even though you have to hear both, the daytime reading is even more important than the nighttime reading. And therefore you should say Shachianu during the day. They also usually announce in Shul that when they say Shachianu during the day, that people shall have in mind the other mitzvot of the day. Su'udah, Mishloach Manos, and Matanos Lev Yom. After Mikra Megillah, we recite a bracha, HaRavet Rivein Avadamet Dineinu Manokei Metik Mateinu. That bracha, custom is to recite that bracha only when there is a minyan. Right. Generally speaking, when there's no minyan, since it's a birkat harashut, we generally don't recite it. There are some who say it even when there's no minyan, but the more accepted custom is not to recite HaRavet Rivenu unless there is a minyan. Yes?
What about Shachianu if you have 2 days apart?
That's what it says before. I think, if I remember correctly, first of all, if you're in shul, the Balkari say it's okay. But I think that if you have 2 days, you would only recite it, I think you'd only recite it the first day, if I remember correctly.
So should you still, like,
say answer, Amen. It's a good question. We know that I have to get back to you. Whether it's a half sick or not. Probably not a half sick. Probably not a half sick to answer on. We of course add on Ala Nisim in the davening in Shemoneh Esrei, and we added on in Birkat HaMazon. You added on the day that you're celebrating. If it's Yudal, Yudal, if it's Tadvav, it's Tadvav, and if it's Vav, it's Vav. If you happen to add it on Yudal, and you're really celebrating Tadvav, or you happen to add it on Tadvav and you celebrated Yudal, You don't have to repeat Shmoneh Esrei, repeat Birkat HaMazon. And if you forgot to say Al HaNisim, which you shouldn't, but if you did, you also don't have to repeat Shmoneh Esrei or Birkat HaMazon. We do not say Halal on Purim. The Gemara gives three reasons why we don't say Halal on Purim. One reason is because the Nes happened in Chutz Laaretz, and we only say Halal on Nisan once we enter the Eretz Yisrael. In Kriyat Yam Suf, we haven't yet come into Eretz Yisrael, except in China. But once we came into Eretz Yisrael, so we only recite Nisan when it happened in Eretz Yisrael. Secondly, in Halal we say Haleluka, Haleluka Dei Hashem, Haleluka, Haleluka Haleluka Dei Hashem. And yet, if the story of Purim, we weren't totally free, we were still Avdei Achashverosh. And thirdly, there's no need to recite Halal because we already reciting Halal. How do we recite Halal? Reading the Megillah is our Halal. That's the third reason. We don't say Tachan, we don't say Lamanatzeach, as well as David Yom Chashem Yom Tzara. There's a Kriyat Satara, a very brief Kriyat Satara, 9 Psukim on Purim morning. We read from Parshat B'Shalach, the last 9 Psukim, Parshat B'Shalach by Yavam Balik. What about the other mitzvot of the day? That the Kriyat HaMegillah is our Halal. The mitzvot of the day, Matanot Lev Yomim. Matanot Lev Yomim means you have to have Ev Yomim in plural. So you have to give a matana, one matana to each of two Ev Yomim. In other words, two poor people have to benefit. It's not clear in the poskim how much, what's the minimum that you have to give. Some poskim say it should be at least the Shavuot Pruta. Shavuot Pruta is not very much money. It's a few agorot, a couple of pennies maybe. However, poskim aren't happy by people being so stingy, so to speak. And one should try to give at least, I would say, at least a shekel to each of two aniyim. If not, not even more so. Who is an ani? Anyone who can't afford basics. A person who can't afford basics or is tremendously in debt and can't pay off those debts, that person qualifies as an ani. You should try to make sure that if you give money on your dalit, if you're a yud dalit person, you give money to an ani on a yud dalit ani. And if you're a tetvav person, give to a tetvav person. For instance, usually here, I think, if I remember correctly, I have to double check. It's possible that maybe we can collect money to give to Tziona, who would give it out on Tetzvah. Right? Your Matanot Lev Yonim should be given out on Tetzvah. And if you were to, let's say, give me money to give out on Beit Shemesh on Yudalit, you're not exactly Yotzei the Mitzvah. So you have to make sure you give your Tetzvah money on Tetzvah. There's a separate halacha on Purim of Kol HaPoshet Yad Notun Lo, that anybody who extends their hands, who might possibly be a poor person, then you give him money on Purim, Matanos Lev Yonim, and you don't say, you know, let me investigate and I'll get back to you. So you don't have to give him a lot, but you have to give him. If the Rambam tells us clearly, it's a mitzvah to be ma'abim and Matanos Lev Yonim, more than a mishloach manot. And therefore, you know, people who give, you know, $2 from Matanot Lev Yonim and spend $200 on their Mishloach Manot, things are a little bit topsy-turvy. You should give, the most important, more important than the Mishloach Manot is the Matanot Lev Yonim. Especially very often we give Mishloach Manot to people who don't need the Mishloach Manot. Sometimes we give Mishloach Manot to the food that's not even being used, people don't even use it. It's junk food, it's this, it's that. So you'll say the mitzvah, but you shouldn't be spending, you know, your limited wealth on the Mishloach Manot. Rather, you should spend more on the Matanot Lev Yonim. Regarding Mishloach Manot, it's Mishloach Manot Ish L'Re'ehu. So as opposed to Matanot Lev Yonim, you need to find two poor people. And by the way, if you can't find any poor person, you have to set aside the money and give it at your first opportunity. But more important, but different than Matanot Lev Yonim, which is two people, it's Mishloach Manot Ish L'Re'ehu. You have to give two Matanot to one person, and you don't say Mishloach Manot. What are Manot? So Manot are portions, right? You're not Yotze if you give your friend one peanut and one raisin. Right. You're not Yotze. It should be a mana chashuva. It should be a mana that's considered important. So for instance, a can of soda, that's an important matter, right? That's a drink for a meal.
Person can eat soda.
So you gave him a can of soda, and you gave him, I don't know, a pineapple. A whole pineapple. So that's also a mana chashuva, right? You give somebody one slice of a clementine, it's not a mana chashuva. A whole clementine would be a mana chashuva. So you have to figure out what it is, what's a mana chashuva. You certainly can give more to more than one person. And if you want to give to a lot of people one peanut and one raisin and give one real mishloach manot, you can do that also. But you have to realize that the others are just you know, nice acts of friendship, but they're not really mishloach manot. It is customary that men give to men, women give to women, and it's not so appropriate for, let's say, a single girl to give to a single guy, or vice versa. I mean, if it's your brother, it's a different story, right? You know, it's okay. If you want to give mishloach manos b'shutafut, right? If you want to give a joint mishloach manos for each to count, so if two people want to give mishloach manos, then you need four manos. In other words, you can't give, you know, a clementine and an apple. One person can give a clementine and an apple, but two people can't give one clementine and one apple. I wanted to give, you know, two people give two clementines and two apples, you know, one clementine and one apple, or a clementine and an apple, a pear, or whatever it is. So there are two manot from each one, and you give it jointly, so then you're yotzer. But otherwise, you can't. And therefore, when a husband and wife are giving mishloach manot, so if you're giving a package, if you're giving a package that has four manot in there, so then it can be two from the husband and two from the wife. But if, you know, somebody's giving a can of soda and a pineapple, so the can of soda and pineapple can't be from me and my wife. No, I can give one for me, and I can give one person a can of soda and pineapple for me, and I can give another person a can of soda and pineapple for my wife, and everybody else I can just say it's from the learners, because we already else it doesn't even really, that's just extra things. But, so my house, what we do is, you know, we there's, you know, all these, you know, the learners, mishloach manot, but there's always one, right, to make sure that this one's mine, this is my wife's, this is my, this one's this kid, that kid, everyone has at least one that's theirs, and then everything else can be just from the learners as a whole.
Are you
just
giving away?
I don't think so. I don't think so, because you're not really, it's not really a different family. You could be also giving, if you lived independently, you could be also giving your parents. But I don't think if you're living in your parents' home, that you can be also giving your parents. If your brother, if you're living independently, then you can be also giving to a sibling. You know, if you're living under the same roof, I'm not so sure that you're yotze.
Can you re-give what you're giving?
What?
Can you re-give what you're giving?
Means
yeah.
The whole world recycles mishloach.
Yeah.
I remember years, many, many years ago, we used to go visit with my cousins, used to go visit a great aunt and uncle. And invariably, whatever we would bring, they would get back. Whatever they would bring, we would get back. She said, you know, why do we bother with the middleman? We should just exchange one to another. But it's definitely possible we should recycle the thing. He always said that, you know, Purim is, because Rav made Purim the wrong time of the year. It shouldn't be, you know, 3 weeks, 4 weeks before you got to get rid of all your chametz. It should be a month after Pesach. That'd be a great time. What happens? You have, you know, the Purim ends, also you got to get rid of all the chametz in the house. You have all this junk food that's going to last forever. Just you should be sensitive to the issue that if you're giving mishloach manos to various people and you're not quite sure what standards of kashrut they may prefer to have, that you should, if you're purchasing things, that you should preferably go ahead and purchase things that have a standard of kashrut that you're pretty sure that they will accept. You know, you buy something for your cousins in Mea Shearim, and you know, it's under the badatz of Ramallah, and they may not be they may not be so happy eating it. So they should just be sensitive to that. It's true all year long, but even regarding this. There's also, of course, a mitzvah of, by the way, regarding the custom is to give, first of all, mishloach manos must be food, right? It's very nice if you want to give somebody a bracelet, but, you know, it's got to be food. And the custom is to give food that's, remarkably to give food that's ready to be eaten. In other words, not a raw piece of meat that needs to be cooked. I can tell, and I've searched in many, many svarim, I never found anybody anywhere who says that you need to give food without two different brachos. I don't know where this came from.
What?
I never heard of it when I was a child. I never heard of this. I couldn't find it in a single sefer. I looked half a dozen svarim at least. No one. So if you can find a makkah that says you need to give two different brachos, I'd be happy to see this. Otherwise, it's very true that you probably can't get away with giving somebody two clementines. Because two clementines may not be two manos, it may be like the same fruit. But you give somebody, you want to give somebody two different fruits.
What if you like two cookies with two different kinds of cookies?
Two different kinds of cookies. Okay, again, the small cookies are probably not enough to be a mana, but you gave like a larger cookies. Wait, you make two cakes. I mean, you gave a chocolate cake and a cinnamon cake and a cinnamon babka. I don't know, whatever it is. Yeah, it'd be outside. The main mitzvah is during the day. Although there's an inyan to have a little bit of an extra suit, a little bit extra meal at night. Generally speaking, we have the main mitzvah after mincha, except when Erev Purim is on Shabbat. When Purim is on Erev Shabbat, then we have the suit in the morning, as we did last year, if I remember correctly. Right. But otherwise, we generally have it in the afternoon. The main part of the mitzvah, main part of the meal, should be eaten during the day. And therefore, you shouldn't start your Suda's Purim 5 minutes before Shkia. You can start it an hour before Shkia and continue way into the night. It's after Purim. But you shouldn't start 5 minutes before Shkia. It's not 100% clear whether you have to eat meat or not, although it seems to be, some of us can lean in that direction, that it's preferable to have meat on the Suda. It's also preferable, and that's the minhag olam, is to wash, that it's a Suda's Lechem. That's preferable. Some people have a minhag to eat kreplach. If you know what kreplach are. So you eat kreplach three times during the year. There's a minhag to eat on Hashanah Rabbah, on Purim, and on Erev Yom Kippur.
What?
Kreplach is basar represents midas hadin, bread represents midas harachamim, and the midas haradin is enveloped and enwrapped and covered up by the midas harachamim. The Ramah writes that it's customary, Yesha Nahagu, Lubos Bigde Shabbos V'Yom Tov Purim, and he says that's proper, and people should definitely get dressed up in the Bigde Shabbos on Purim. Of course, if you're wearing the costume, it's a little difficult, but if you're not, then you'll see that Chassidim people are Shtarmach, or Shtarmach, and Bekesha, so that people wear the Bigde Shabbos on Purim, you shouldn't get dressed in your Shlumpi, not that any of you have any Shlumpi clothes or anything, Chas V'Shalom, but except the ones that you sleep in all the time, and then you wear the next day. Okay. But you should dress nicely on Purim. The Ramah writes that there's a custom to Lilbosh Partsufim the Purim, to wear masks. All sorts of reasons why. Hester Panim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Maski Panav, right? Hester Panim in Atomi 9, Hester in Atomi 9, Shunemar, Anochi Aski Aski Panai, there's a connection with Hester, Hester Panim, and of course if your mask face is covered with a mask, and this has blossomed and bloomed into much more than just covering, wearing a little bit of a mask on your face. The Ramah discusses an issue which in Aisha Vamitzot hopefully we'll be getting to soon before Purim, the question of men wearing women's clothing and women wearing men's clothing on Purim. He writes, Ein Isa Badavar, it's not us to do on Purim, because your Kavani is L'simcha Ba'alma, V'yeshom in the Asur, and they would also say that it is Asur, but the minhag is to allow men to get dressed up in women's clothing, women to get dressed up in men's clothing. The Mishnah Berurah quotes a number of Achronim who did not like the minhag, and it is preferable that even so one should not get dressed up. They also say that even if you want to rely on the Ramah, you shouldn't get dressed up totally in custom does. It should be visible that you are the gender that you are, and not to be able to pass yourself off as in another gender. One last issue which requires a discussion in and of itself, and I'm not going to talk about now, and that is the question of Chai Vinish Lusumei Bepur Adelai Adab Einar Aman Levaro Mordechai, which is in terms of drinking on Purim. The Achronim, first the Rishonim, later on the Achronim, deal with the issue extensively. Many, many Achronim say that one should be Mekayim. First of all, the Ramah writes that we're Mekayim the Minhag by drinking a little bit more than we usually drink, and then going to sleep. And while you're sleeping, you don't know Binara Hamid Mavarak Mardechai, and that fulfills the mitzvah. Numerous Achonim write that if drinking is going to interfere with your ability to be Mekai in many mitzvahs during the day, the brachos, because Hamazal, Tefillah, etc., that one should refrain from drinking. A number of poskim point out that even if you say that one should drink, it's only for the men and the women shouldn't be drinking, either because ain't dakam lishtalt, or even more so, if no one remains sober, we're all going to be in trouble. I come very much from the school of thought that, as I said before, I have a little bit more to drink than I usually do, which is not that much anyway, and then I take a nap on Purim, and Kaimat lo yada, and I think that's appropriate. Some people tend to drink a little bit more. There are those who can drink more and can handle it, and there are always those who can drink more and can't handle it. It's a nice simcha that you can see, and then there's some not nice things that you'll see in the streets of Yerushalayim or anywhere else, in terms of sometimes teenagers who simply have had, you know, can't handle their liquor, don't know how to hold the liquor, and it's not so nice, and I think it actually ruins the spirit of the day, and you can certainly be misameach without overdoing it and have a wonderful time. There's more to talk about this issue. I don't know if somebody else is going to give a shira on it or not, but if not, are there any other questions? Okay, so we'll stop here.